You're listening to Pod for Ham, a podcast from The Incomparable that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time through the original Broadway cast recording. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track. Visit us on the web at pod4ham.com or follow us on Twitter at pod4ham.
I know him. That can't be. That's that little guy who spoke to me all those years ago. What was it? 85. That poor man, they're going to eat him alive. Oceans rise, empires fall.
Welcome back to Pod for Ham, an American musical podcast. I'm your host this week, David J. Lohr, and with me are Allison Baker. Hello.
Hi.
Angela Fazilian. Hello.
Hello.
And Deb Stanish.
Hello.
Hello. And Shannon Sudderth.
Hi.
Hola.
Hola.
And this week we are talking about I Know Him, which sounds very familiar if you've been listening to the rest of the show.
I know him.
Yeah. That guy comes out once in a while, red, shiny coat, sparkles.
He has a funny walk.
Can turn on point.
He's got this big Carmen Miranda thing.
Yeah.
So this is King George with his last reprise. So it's again, the same melody as You'll Be Back. And he is talking about the election of John Adams as the second president of the United States. And he's kind of surprised and amused and expects this will go very, very badly.
All I know about like this particular track, like in terms of like why I like it, is that I was a big fan of the John Adams miniseries because it filmed in my hometown. And so like I knew people that got to be extras in it. Otherwise, I didn't know that much about John Adams. In the series, there's a scene where he goes and he meets with the King of England as the United States' first official ambassador to the U.S. And the meeting goes very awkwardly, but like pleasantly. Tom Hollander, who I think the only other thing I remember him from is the third Pirates of the Caribbean movie. He plays King George, not with nearly as much pizzazz as the stage version. But like there's kind of this sort of it seems very polite. And then afterwards, like the press reports on it, like Adams made a fool of himself. And Adams takes it super personally because it's John Adams. And he, you know, that's just how he was. But like, I love that entire concept is compressed into this tiny little toss aside reference. I don't know. I guess it speaks to me of like Lin-Manuel is as big a dork for this stuff as as any history geek could be. Like he's not just in it for like the hip hop and the theater. He's in it for the genuine like he didn't just read the Chernow book. He also like was absorbing other kinds of founders based media and digging it. So I don't know. It just makes it more legit to me.
Yeah. The vibe is definitely, it's extremely dismissive and it's extremely gleeful. Like when you see your ex dating the person that you just know is going to wreck them, like there's just this sort of gleeful joy in the impending doom that you know is coming. So I agree with you that the condensation of history into this very short, dismissive, amused, bemused little throwaway sort of song is really brilliant because it does bring all those historical aspects into it.
Well, and it's, you know, at the first part of the song is where he's incredulous that they're even going to do this. What do you mean he's going to step away from power? Why would anyone do that? And then a soldier leans over and whispers in his ear, and he's like, what? No. No, no.
Honestly, I feel like that probably like reflects the view of a lot of the American people because, I mean,
indeed, yeah.
Americans had not known anything but monarchy, and they're like, great, cool, we elected a president. And then like 8 years later, they're like, wait, we have to do this again? do we have to keep doing this? Like,
I understand that feeling after going through this election cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of resonates.
It feels really real. Yeah.
Doesn't it?
I don't think their election cycle started like 2 years early like ours did. But, you know, I mean, maybe
Well, they had a lot of a deep bench at the time as well. You know, I mean,
an actually deep bench.
Yeah. Unlike possibly some scenarios we have now. It's not quite such a deep bench. But.
It's not a deep bench so much as it is a bench adrift in an ocean.
It's wide. It's not very deep.
Yes.
But yeah, I love how, you know, it comes, you know, it does everything a reprise should do. It brings back oceans rise and empires fall. But it ends, it devolves into the, you know, da-da-da-da-da, and he can't even finish it. He just breaks down into laughter.
I honestly, my favorite part's the sign-off. President John Adams, like, he punctuates every consonant like an insult. Good luck, buddy. Like,
yeah, the whole song has bits like that with a lot of the language that they use makes it sound like that the new United States is this wild, savage, uncontrollable land. They're gonna eat him alive. They're gonna tear each other to pieces. Things like that. As he, you know, and part of this song, I think, that makes this song is, of course, the staging that Groff on the cast album. And now
Rory,
I can't remember.
Rory,
thank
Rory.
You. Mm-hmm. The what they bring to the role, because we've had in the first two songs, King George comes out very stately and all that sort of thing. Here, he just sort of wanders out on stage as Washington's leaving, and the two of them stop and just sort of look at each other for a minute. And King George's mouth is open before he starts singing, just like, this is, you're really? Yeah, you're going? Oh, okay. You know, from that to the air quotes around country, to the smirking, it all to the what? I've seen a couple of versions where the Sentinel comes and whispers in his ear, and he just goes, what? And the Sentinel whispers again, and they both look incredulous. And I've also seen it where the Sentinel just grins and starts rocking back and forth like, oh, this is going to be good. And George joins in with the grin of his own. So the way they play this on stage sells it beautifully.
Yeah, to me, I always imagine the end, like that gif that you see of, you know, Michael Jackson eating popcorn. To me, that's how King George ends this, right? Like, he's just waiting for all of this to go awry, and he's going to sit over here and eat his popcorn and enjoy it while you peasants figure your things out.
In this case, sit over there and start dancing to the next song and make Leslie Odom Jr. break. Which has happened.
Or that. Yeah. Yes.
My understanding is that as the King George songs, I haven't seen the show. I'm seeing the show in like 3 weeks, and I
you'll love it.
Freaking out. I bought my tickets in January. I've literally had a countdown clock on my phone since then. Oh my God. My understanding is that when we first meet King George, he's in all of his royal resplendency. Crown, scepter, mink coat thing, like the whole deal. And then as each song progresses, he's got a little bit less like finery until we get to this song where he's kind of stripped down. And then like by when he makes his cameo in the Reynolds pamphlet number, he's not even wearing his crown. He just kind of like pops out there for funsies in his in his wig and then pops back in. And I feel like that's a really wonderful way to sort of echo the fact that this is his least kingly song. Like, he actually at least portrays, like, while he's always the spurned lover in his own mind, at least in this characterization, he's always portraying somehow like a loss of dignity. And this is just kind of like, you know, like you said, like, he's got the popcorn, his shoes are off, his feet are on the table, and he's just like, oh, we gonna watch this and it's gonna be fun. Like,
yep.
There's very little of royal personage about him at this point. And granted, like, historically, he was losing his damn mind at this point. But
yes.
Yes. That's what I was gonna say. That, I mean, the laugh gives it away, right?
Giggle does get more manic. I love
that. Yeah. I think it's great.
I love the nod right in the beginning of you'll be back, of, you know, if you go, I'll go mad. Mm-hmm. Because I saw the madness of George III back when the original London cast, when they came to the Brooklyn Academy of Music, which that's a whole other story. It was a good play.
I've never seen the play. I've seen the movie, which I think they just called The Madness of King George.
Yes,
because they were afraid people would think it was a sequel. that is seriously why they did that.
Wow. The madness of George. I get it. Okay, Roman numerals can be people.
And
I blame Star Wars.
It was an interesting play. It had good moments. The opening was a little distracting because it's a bare stage with a sort of a pyramid of steps that run the length of the stage. And because we were sitting up in the mezzanine, you could see all the stage managers and running crew ducking down and running behind the stairs. So, like, if you were down in the orchestra, you just saw steps. It was fine. But for the whole play, you could see behind this, which was really odd. And you could see the whole cast at the beginning of the play. They come, you know, walking up the steps arm in arm, linked arm in arm. And it's very dramatic if you're at that level. But if you're all the way above, you can see Nigel Hawthorne hunching down and waiting until it's his cue to stand up. And it's very odd. Anyway, that one portrays the full tilt madness. And the portrayal in this, at least from the songs, kind of matches up with the tone of that. I'm sure he has at least seen the movie, if not the play. And so again, it was just little things like that, and little the digs. I'm saying little over and over again. The digs at Adams's height, because he was not a tall man.
Compared to Washington's, yes.
Especially compared to Washington.
Well, in the famous painting too, he's in the lower, you know, two thirds of it. I mean, it's clearly a dig that's been made on him since his own time.
I mean, I feel like it's the defining dig on Adams, especially. I mean, even in the John Adams miniseries, like, you don't get away from it, especially in any scene that he shares with George Washington.
And the heck of it is, he's not even the shortest guy around. That was Madison.
That's right.
Yeah. But he was the one that was standing next to George Washington all the time.
Yes.
So
yes.
It just made it that much worse. Because Washington, like, one of his defining characteristics was being this giant of a man in both build and personality to most people.
And it's that sort of wordplay like you were talking about. You know, it mentioned earlier, it's, you know, if you leave me, I'll go mad. It's this idea. It's the contrast of not only are you small in stature, you're small in regard, you're small in your legacy and what you have done. And I think that that is the one thing that I enjoy about this musical so much is the cleverness of the words that can be pulled apart in so many different directions. And however you want to look at it, you're right. But there's layers upon layers and layers of that. And just, I mean, you're digging at him because it's a sore point for him. And it's obviously you're making that trollish comment. But it has so many different layers to the meaning of he's so small, you know, and he's just not in stature.
Yeah, agreed.
One point to get back to at the beginning of the song where, you know, King George is saying he doesn't realize someone can walk away from power. But, I mean, historically, he actually did offer to step down from the throne after losing, the Revolutionary War. So, I mean, we know it's not historically accurate, but...
And don't you think that that line is delivered a little longingly? Like, I kind of wish I could do that too.
Oh, right.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It does seem that way, yes.
In a sort of, you know, it's so random. It makes me think of Blackadder. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It sort of makes me imagine that season where it's like, oh, I do wish I could do that, but my buffoon of a son. Like, I don't know. Like, I can just imagine, like, a Hugh Laurie in the wings waiting to take over for him. He's like... God, I wish I could just stop this.
Well, I have to say, having, you know, when I saw George III, watching Blackadder against that, especially Blackadder III, coincidence, I guess, it really informed the history. It was like, wow, that they did a really nice job in this British sitcom. Hey. And so, yeah, I was having lots of Blackadder thoughts through this, too.
So funny that, like, primary relationship that you can have to this is through British media, because, like, American media hasn't, like, we just, no one gives a crap about this particular, like, no one cares about the second president.
Yeah.
You were number two, and you had one term. Like, you learned about John Adams as a comma in a clause in AP US history, and then you move right ahead. You're like, oh, yeah, Alien Sedition Acts. That was a terrible idea. And then you just keep going.
Right. Or you never learn about him at all, because all I knew about him was he also had a son who was president. Right. Like, that's it. That's what I learned in high school history. Right. I mean, so.
Well, I remember when I was little, they did the Adams Chronicles on Masterpiece Theater and and my family all watched it. And I was just young enough that I conflated that in the Addams Family, which that doesn't quite work.
You're like, where is Morticia?
That's right. Where's
that
Lurch?
History that much more interesting, though, doesn't it?
Indeed. The first goth family of America.
You
Wednesday
rang.
For first
although,
lady.
I mean,
would watch the hell out of that. I'm
right?
just going to put that out
right?
there.
Right?
Political, yep. Like a political documentary of the Addams Family. There. Give me Grown Up Wednesday running for office.
Oh, hell yes.
And the fourth president, John Gomez Adams. Tish, you know I love it when you speak French.
That just makes you elitist. Sorry.
Well, they say he's a Francophile, but at least they know he knows where France is.
Exactly.
Oh my God, this is taking a turn I didn't realize it was going to take.
These things happen.
Well, it kind of fits with the pacing in Hamilton itself, because you've got, you know, George coming back for this, you know, final time that we're going to see him as far as singing and performing the character on stage. And, you know, President John Adams, good luck. And from here, it kind of all tumbles to pieces.
Yeah,
for Hamilton. No. Character
That's
arc,
true.
You know,
and then we have like the 1 hour sadness zone.
Yeah,
and this is a good leavening for that, because the second half is not fun generally, but this is a little break, and then it's going to get even worse.
Yeah,
I mean, I think it's fun, but then I think the Reynolds Pamphlet is an amazingly fun song.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, yes. Song-wise, yes, but as far as, you know, our lead character Hamilton and his life, things are just about to go to hell in a handbasket.
And on that note, I think we've exhausted this song, you think?
I think so.
I think we've squeezed all the life out
Pretty
of it
much.
We possibly can. Mm-hmm.
I think I will go laughing off into the night, and I will thank my guests, Allison Baker and Jelle Fazilian and Deb Stanish and Shannon Sutterth. And we'll talk to you again next week.
They will tear each other into pieces. Jesus Christ, this will be fun. Da 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 da. President John Adams. Good luck.